Welcome back to the second episode of How I Got Through It. I'm so glad that you're here. This week, I'm speaking with the talented artist, mother, and friend, Hannah Corman. In this episode, Hannah shares the touching story of the doctors revealing to her that her newborn was diagnosed with a rare form of muscle dystrophy. In this episode, we discuss questioning life, how to care for yourself during difficult times, and discovering the greater purpose when challenges and difficulties arrive at your door. Let's get started with the conversation and welcome again to the second episode of How I Got Through It. Hannah, thank you so much for being here with us today. When I heard your story for the first time, I couldn't help but think, just how is she going through this? And as you know, the podcast is called How I Got Through It. I ask my guests to bring a life thing that they've been through or currently going through, and we look at it together. So share with the audience listening today, what is the life thing that you're bringing to the table?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and share our story. I'm Hannah, and what I am bringing to the table today is a terminal diagnosis for my younger son, whose name is Austin. He is almost 2 years old, and when he was about 6 months old, he was diagnosed with a condition called LCMD, which stands for LMNA-related congenital muscular dystrophy. So we've gotten through parts of it. We're obviously still in the thick of it. He is a happy, thriving little kid at the moment. He just is physically quite different than a typical two-year-old.
First of all, I'm so sorry to hear that. Walk me through, you're about to have this baby almost about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. You had no idea that it was anything other than a routine pregnancy, correct?
Correct.
And you give birth and you're so excited for this bundle of joy. And then a couple months into it, is it that you see signs that something is off, something's different? Is it a mother's intuition? Walk me through what happened.
It's so interesting because I think in hindsight, looking back, there were so many signs and instances of things that make total sense now in light of this disease. At the time, there were lots of issues, but each individual issue was not necessarily a red flag. Like each thing was potentially within the realm of being along. For instance, when he was born, he actually had to spend a little bit of time in the NICU right after birth because he had a double collapsed lung. And no one could really tell us why, but he got better. And okay, fine, we moved on. He was never really a good eater. It was kind of a struggle to get him to drink enough milk. But again, it was like, well, you know, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe he has a food allergy, maybe he has a tongue tie. So again, it was like troubleshooting a particular issue.
And you kind of took it as it came, right? Each instance, you kind of like, okay, let's deal with this, cross this bridge and on to the next.
Correct. Exactly. It was never like, oh, maybe this is some sort of marker of something bigger or more. And I think the first thing that really was maybe the biggest red flag was he stopped picking his head up in tummy time. So again, we were reading a lot and some folks said, oh, well, it could be a phase, nothing to worry about. He'll get there, you know, his neck muscles will get stronger. But finally, someone said, you know, it's not really common that a child gains a skill and then loses it again. Like that is not a good sign. So that all happened within the first 6 months. All these things kind of built up on each other. And yet we didn't want to think that there was something bigger, nor does one necessarily assume there is something bigger.
I guess you said that someone mentioned that it's not common for a child to
gain a skill and then lose a skill. So I'm assuming that you took Austin to the doctor and then maybe did some tests and found out that there is a bigger problem here.
Right, exactly. So when he was about 5 months old, it was actually our gastroenterologist who was concerned about the lack of weight gain and kind of falling off the growth curve and said, well, let's admit Austin to the hospital down here in Houston where we live, mm-hmm. and we will ensure while he's in the hospital that he gets the proper nutrition that he needs. And also it will be an opportunity for various specialists to come around and see him and maybe give their opinion about what could potentially be the problem. And so we did that. We were reluctant, to be honest, but we said, fine, okay, we'll go to the hospital. We were actually in the hospital then for 3 weeks while they ran various tests, the major one of which was genetic testing, where they look at the DNA sequences of his genes. And this is where they discovered this mutation. And my husband and I also had genetic testing at the same time. Neither of us carry this genetic mutation. So it was just randomly occurring thing that happens. You know, we've since learned a lot. We've learned that prenatal genetic testing, the kind of what they look for when you're pregnant, is not the full gamut of your DNA. It's just right. really looking at the most common mutations and issues. So this is not something that would be picked up on that sort of prenatal genetic testing.
Is this common in the world? Is there a cure? Did they give you any data regarding that?
At the time in the hospital, we learned there were about 50 cases recorded in medical literature of LCMD. We've since come to learn that there are about 200 kids in the world with this diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And we've learned that the majority, if not all, are randomly occurring, where the parents do not carry the mutation. And we've learned, so it's very rare. It's considered ultra rare. There are no treatments and there is no cure. And what Wow. we know about it is that it's a muscle wasting disease. So the children get progressively weaker. We do know that with LCMD in particular, the heart muscle is particularly affected and the kids develop arrhythmias, and that's, you know, often what they die from is either some sort of heart incident or respiratory failure, because the chest muscles just get so weak that they can't Right. fight off pneumonia or other infections.
I compassionately ask this because I know you're a mother. Is there an expectancy that the doctor has given you for Austin, or an expectancy in general for these 200 kids that have been diagnosed with this across the world?
It's so rare that they aren't really enthusiastic to give you a timeline like that, because the kids are kind of all over the map. But kids are passing away in infancy, as young as 2 years old. Some mm-hmm. kids are living into their teens. Every child is different. But statistically, less than 18-year life expectancy. Kids typically develop heart problems between the ages of 8 and 10. And then that's what will ultimately be the demise. Even they might live a number of years beyond developing the heart issues.
So I have to ask you, because the name of the podcast is How I Got Through It. And while you're still in the thick of it, I can only imagine being a mother, giving birth, thinking that you're going to have this new addition to your family, hearing this diagnosis, understanding that there may be an expectancy up until 10 or maybe beyond with some technologies, but still not sure, right? Mm-hmm. Still not what a regular mother would expect to see their child throughout their entire life. How are you dealing with this? And that's a very broad question, but maybe the question is,
what strengths has this evoked in you?
Yeah, that is a big question for sure. I think when we first got this diagnosis, it was like a lot of shock and overwhelm and really not bouncing back and forth between
right.
not processing and not accepting, and then almost giving up, like, oh my gosh, what's the point even? everything we imagined that we might be doing as a family is turned on its head now, right? I have an older son who is 2 years older than Austin, and it's like, are the kids going to go to the same school? How are they going to be able to play together? If Austin can't sit up, if he can't walk or run or ride a bike, not only how is that going to affect Austin, but then like, how's that going to affect our older son too? And so all these questions just like pinging around your head. And I think I could get very stuck in sad and in wallowing. But I think the strength part, it's, I don't know that it's anything in particular. I think one, we were just like thrown into this new routine, all this stuff that we have to do now for Austin in terms of therapies that he goes to almost every day. He eats exclusively through a G-tube directly into his stomach, and he eats 6 times a day, including overnight. So doing all those things, it's like constantly throughout the day, it almost like doesn't give you time to really sit and
process.
Yeah, totally. So there's that. And then I think time and talking about it too. There was definitely a period of time where we, or at least I can speak for myself, I don't know about my husband, but kind of just shut down and like shut out the world. Now, granted, this was also really right at the beginning of COVID and lockdown. So there was not an expectation to go out in the world and be talking. And so it was like just this quiet period for me of figuring out how to get through the day.
And maybe that's the answer too, just getting through the day, which is, I think, a universal message for anyone that is going through something, something maybe similar to what you're going through, or loss of a job, heartbreak, loss of a parent, all the gamut of things that we go through in life. I think that you bring up a really good point of maybe the first step is to just get through the day. I feel that way with my day when I'm having a difficult time. Like yesterday, I had a really shit day. I woke up. It's just kind of one of those that you wake up and you're like, I'm not sure today's going to be such a good day. And then progressively, it proves to be true. In the day. And all I could tell myself yesterday was, I just need to actually just wait this out, get through this day. And today, by the way, is a much better day. Like, I woke up so much better, you know, and I'm so happy to be here, sitting here doing this with you. So I think maybe that's probably the first part, I would imagine, as a mother or as anyone, just getting through the day. But the reason I asked about your strength is because, Hannah, it takes a very strong person also to kind of walk into the life that you have, that has showed up at your door, and then continue to do so, continue to care for a child and go through all the motions. And you said feeding 6 times a day, sometimes even overnight, which tells me there's some loss of sleep as well. And all the things that's involved in that, it does take a great deal amount of strength. But I think that that's probably also comes from you being a mother and doing what's necessary for this child that you've brought into the world.
I would agree. I think that there's an aspect of you just do it, right? Like, you just do what you have to do. You just put one foot in front of the other. We are responsible for this human. And so we, of course, we want to, but we also don't have a choice, right? Like, we do the steps necessary to take care of any child, no matter their physical abilities, their mental abilities, their personality, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. To a certain extent, everybody's got something, right? Everyone's got some hardship. And yet, to a certain extent, this one might be one that's like inescapable, right? Like, you just have to do it. You just have to take care of it.
Has this question come up for you? Why is this happening? What am I supposed to learn from this? When I'm faced with challenges, sometimes that comes up, not initially for sure, because it's like so much resistance to what's happening in the beginning. But somewhere along the lines, I do think of those questions. Have you thought of those questions for yourself?
I think it's been less about why is this happening, or why is this happening to me, in like a woe is me kind of way,
right?
But definitely thinking about how can we turn this experience into a purpose or a greater good, even for ourselves. How are we changing? What are we learning? What does our older son learning and what is Austin learning. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think there is a deep-seated desire to make it count, to make this situation the best that it can be, right? Like the best, most joyous thing, and also the most awareness raising, or whatever the thing is, instead of just sitting and like wallowing in it, like turning it around and, like you said, kind of creating a bigger purpose out of the situation.
I have complete goosebumps thinking about you doing that in this situation, because I was journaling this morning and I was thinking a little bit in preparation for this session, but I was thinking about just pain in general and challenges and difficulties and really unwelcomed situations. And something came out this morning on the paper where I wrote down, it's kind of like an unwelcomed guest, right? That comes to your door.
Yes.
But if you always have a spare room in your home, in your body, in your heart, and it is a sacred and pristine kind of place where even that unwelcome guess of pain or challenges can stay and be transformed into something. When it leaves, ideally, I think it should leave as a welcomed guest because it took that time inside of you to heal, to transform, and to become something better. So you're not transmitting the pain and the hurt that you feel to other people in the world, into the collective world, if that makes any sense. And I just actually think of it as like a physical unwelcomed guest that just like kind of knocks at your doors with all their baggage. And you're like, oh yeah, yeah, here, I have this room I've been preparing, you know, and I've been reading books, I've been listening to podcasts, I've been meditating, I've been doing these things. Here's this room, and it's transformed into something different. And I kind of think that's what I feel when I hear you talk about it, about taking this thing that has showed up at your door and thinking about how you can transform it into awareness, or awareness about this disease, or lessons that can be learned by your older son about this situation, by seeing his parents model out strength and how to handle difficulties. Think about how to transform that. I salute you and your husband.
When you say that, it brings that up to mind. Have you read that poem by Rumi called The Guest House?
No, I have not.
Oh, well, look it up. It kind of spot on to what you said. It just basically, it does. It talks about life as a physical home, essentially, and all the things that show up at your door and how you welcome them in. You have to, essentially, no matter how much they destroy your home.
Yes.
You have to welcome them in. You have to be grateful for whatever comes, because they've been sent to you and you don't have a choice. And the other thing you said that's just so interesting about meditating is that I think you know that that's been a big part of my life for a long time, meditating and trying to practice mindfulness. And it's so interesting because I truly have had these flashes where it's like, oh my gosh, this situation is like an ultimate test of these skills that I've been honing for the past number of years, because it is about living in the moment with Austin and enjoying every bit of it and not ruminating on the bigger picture and the final outcome and whatever's going to happen happens.
Right, because you have to be so present.
Yes.
Which is something that I think meditation teaches you, because in your situation, and really everyone's situation, but you don't know, tomorrow is actually not promised. This moment is the moment that you do have with Austin.
Absolutely. The other thing that happened, which is a slightly off topic, but it gave me chills, was shortly after his diagnosis, or maybe even right before when we were in the hospital, I spoke with a woman who is an energy healer, and I had her kind of tap into Austin's energy. Yeah. And before I really even told her anything, she said, I'm just getting joy from this child. This is like, he wants me to tell you that he's all about joy. Like, he's here on this earth in this family to experience joy. And that's his purpose. And I'm like, okay, you know, digest that. That's lovely. now I have my marching orders, right? Like to create this love and this joy for Austin and this happy family for him to experience.
Yeah.
But maybe a week or so after that, I was looking back through my journal from the time when I was pregnant, and about a month or two before Austin was born, I had written in my journal, "Which I am seeking is also seeking me." And in big letters, underlined, exclamation point, I had written joy. Isn't that weird?
I'm actually tearing up.
So strange. And I had forgotten about it. And then I saw that and I was just like, whoa, blew me away.
When I hear you say that story, what I can think of is what a gift Austin is actually.
Yeah.
You know, to you. He is a question that you had answered, I think. And his energy in the message also is that, I mean, even though he's going through this, children have this great ability to just be so enthusiastic and so happy because they're not like phased with all the worldly things that adults are faced with yet, right?
Right.
So they're just here to enjoy and be happy. And he probably is like super enjoying life, you know?
I hope so.
And I think that is so enlightened of you to consciously create an environment that he can enjoy this joy that he's also bringing to you, that he can enjoy this life and be at the highest happiness and joy, you know, like not make it a sad and sorrowful experience now that you know that. How did you run into the energy healer?
I actually spoke to her on the phone. She's a friend of a friend of mine and our mutual friend. She is a therapist and a Reiki healer. So I was talking to her about it and I was saying, gosh, I would really love to just know what Austin is thinking, right? Like just know like what is going on with this kid. I think it was a little bit before we'd had his diagnosis because he wasn't eating any, all these things. And I was like, what's going on? Like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I would just love to know. And she goes, oh, I know who you should talk to. And she put me in touch.
Well, that's how life happens, right? It's like,
absolutely.
You have the intuition, you want to know. And like you said, even before his diagnosis, there was some kind of inkling there that you just kind of wanted to find out more or something. You kind of knew maybe something was going on. And then life just brings you these people and these scenarios and these things. On that same thread, how are you then taking care of yourself through this situation? I don't want to call it a situation now that we know Austin's energy is joy and all of that stuff. But how are you taking care of yourself?
I think a lot of it is just mental. I don't have tons of time necessarily to dedicate to myself, but I do just try to consciously think of myself, if that makes sense. And then when I can, I carve out snippets of time. I think we had talked about one time before bed is, I think probably a lot of mothers, that's their time for themselves is before bed. And it's when I can shut off the phone, be done with all the work for the day, be done with all the Austin stuff, and just either meditate or pray or journal or read a book. I'm always reading a few books and one or two are always kind of sciencey at this point, but I also have to have one or two that are like just super lighthearted before drifting off to sleep.
Yeah.
Funny books, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. And it also maybe to also act as a little bit of an escape for you as well, right?
Oh,
like
definitely.
To get involved in someone else's story, you know? I'm in therapy once a week and I love it. I think it's, I don't know why I've never done this before. Do you practice anything like that?
So I do speak with a grief therapist every other week, and that is lovely. I think we've gone beyond really just the down and out grief stuff and turned it into just like life therapy. I would say I either meditate or pray every night. Mm-hmm. They kind of maybe roll into one another a bit.
So you mentioned a grief counselor. What have you learned about grief during this process?
Oh, so much. I would say, gosh, these are not necessarily revelations, but to me they were. First off, that like it's not linear. Duh. Everybody always says that. And I didn't necessarily
And explain that for people that may not have heard that, you know?
Exactly. It's not step A through Z and now you're over it. There's different, I feel like a lot of people have heard of like the stages of grief, and that's true, but they don't happen in any particular order, I think. So some days there are denial days. Some days there's like wallow and give up days. Right. Some days there's fight and do everything we possibly can and like really energize days. And it's a little bit like high energy and low energy. And it could really swing, I gotta say, from day to day or hour to hour. And things can just trigger it a bit. You might be having a perfectly fine day. And then, like, for instance, I was going through clothes that are both now too small for Ian and Austin. Mm-hmm. And it's like, do I save these? Do I give them away? Like, it's like, I'm never going to have another kid that's going to wear these clothes. And I know obviously like lots of parents go through that experience where you're like closing things up, right? And a chapter is ending. And, but that could bring it up a little bit, right? Because it's not just, oh, this chapter's ending, but it's like, this chapter's ending. And I'll put it this way. There's some things that our older son doesn't use anymore that I'm not saving for Austin because he's never going to use it. So that's
heartbreaking too.
Yeah. Like when we first got his diagnosis, we had all sorts of toys or equipment or whatever you want to call it, like the high chair. We had our older son's high chair. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, Austin's never going to sit in this high chair. He doesn't eat by mouth. He can't hold his head up. He can't sit up. I don't even want this high chair in my house. Like, I don't want to look at it. Like, I got to get rid of it.
Yes, yes.
Or, yeah, things like that. So that can just trigger it where you least expect it, I guess.
And what happens when it's triggered? Do you just let it come and then let it go? You let it overtake you and then you let it go?
Each time is a little different, I got to say. Like, sometimes it's sadness. Sometimes it's, I got to just push this away a bit, which probably isn't the healthiest. Well, and sometimes it's anger, really. And a lot of times that, I think you and I had talked about this one other time too. It's like some days everything's just fine. And some days the same exact thing that happened on the fine day then triggers a response. So that's a bit strange because it's not like let me avoid this thing at all costs because I know that's going to trigger me. Because no, sometimes it's perfectly fine. But then sometimes it's like, oh, I can't go on Facebook today because like I literally cannot see another picture of a child who's the same age as Austin doing something that Austin can't do or isn't going to be able to do.
Yes. Yeah. The parallels that you drew between anger and grief, I think are also really important. When I have been in deep grief, I asked you the question about it because sometimes for me, I just have to let it wash over me. Mm-hmm. And then when it's done, right? It might take a day, it might take 2 days, whatever. And then it's done. And I felt like that like a couple days ago where I remember just like I was doing something very routine. Okay. I had just gotten out of the shower. I feel like the shower, first of all, is like just a magic portal of thoughts. Like everything comes up in the shower. And then I get out the shower and then I just feel this grief come over me. Mm-hmm. And I just sat there and I cried. And I think that crying for me is a good release because it kind of gets whatever was going on the inside of me out of me, you know, like it's just a way to kind of release it. And then there have been times where I've gotten so angry and I can't exactly pinpoint it. And then later in the year or later in the week, I'm like, oh, that was also my grief. That anger was also my grief in a different form. I remember one time I was feeling it when I was playing tennis and I was just so angry. Like I was hitting the ball like really hard and I just didn't understand. It was even hurting my hand to hit it this hard. And I was like, what is this? And I was like, oh, this is my grief in a different form. So what I went back to doing is just doing the activity, maybe hitting the ball a little harder than I would usually hit it. But that was the way that I needed to kind of get that grief out of me as well. So that's why I ask about, you know, how you deal with grief in this instance.
Yeah, that's totally a good point that it just kind of shows up in different
forms,
different mental forms. And each time it might take a different tactic for you to move through it.
Yeah. And so what do you want other parents to know that may be dealing with something similar or the exact same thing?
The first thing that has just been so helpful to us was connecting with other parents, whether or not the children were dealing with the exact same disease or just other rare diseases. Mm-hmm. Just talking felt like other people get it. Other people have gone through it. Other people are going through it. I mean, it still is just a huge support to talk to other people who are like on a similar journey. So that I would say is number one, most important. Number two, just living it as trite as it sounds, I guess, just living in the moment or living day to day. And I think a lot of parents dealing with this type of thing are doing that because you don't know what tomorrow is going to hold. You don't really have a choice. You're so hyper-focused on the tasks at hand. But yeah, like getting through the day is just helpful and just focusing on every little aspect and focusing on the kid as much as possible.
And being present is more of a necessity for parents that are going through this as opposed to a choice.
Totally. I think.
I'm just going to wrap up with this. And before I do, again, I just wanted to tell you, I'm in admiration of your strength and your awareness and your ability to look at this unwelcomed guest that showed up at your door and be able to think about the greater good and how you can take this challenge and not only how has it changed you, but how you can transform it into something different for the world. So I know you guys have a Kickstarter. I know that you're raising funds for different causes. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's really important.
Yeah. So we decided that the best way that we could help raise awareness and advance research and science was to start a nonprofit. So we've started an organization called the LCMD Research Foundation, which is focused on creating treatments and ultimately a cure for LCMD. There's a lot of fabulous research that's already been done, and we want to make things that are going to go into people to help them to get stronger, to live longer, to hopefully just, you know, improve the quality of life. Because with LCMD, at least, most of the kids are cognitively typical. So it's really just like the physical aspect. So for us, we were like, you know, Austin can make a mark on the world if he can live long enough to do it. I mean, he's obviously going to make a mark on all the people that come in contact with him just like emotionally, but what things are lying in his brain to share? So our goal is to get things into children to make their lives better. We have a website, which is lcmdresearch.org. It is a 501c3 nonprofit. We've launched a number of research projects already, and we are currently fundraising $2 million for a gene therapy project with UMass Medical and the Instituto de Salud Carlos Trez in Madrid, Spain. They're working in collaboration to hopefully create a treatment for LCMD that hopefully we can get through clinical trials, through the FDA, and into children.
And we'll put it in the show notes.
So wonderful. Thank you.
Just click on the link. And that's how they can get involved, right?
Correct. And I welcome emails as well. It's Hannah, H-A-N-N-A-H, at lcmdresearch.org. Ping me, say hi, get involved, help us spread awareness, raise money, all that good stuff.
Good. Yes, I'll put that also in the show notes. And thank you so much, Hannah, for spending this time. I know your time is very limited in a day, but thank you for spending time to speak with me and create an awareness about all of the subjects. I feel like not only we touched on Austin and what's kind of personally going on with you, but how you're dealing with it. And I think there's a lot of things in this episode that people can resonate with regardless of what is going on in their life. And so I thank you for even sharing those parts of yourself here with us. So many prayers to Austin and to you and to your husband and your family for strength and support. And I'm sure, and if you're listening to this episode, if you also want to just shoot Hannah an email letting her know how much you're thinking of her and her family as well, I'm sure she'll welcome that. But thank you so much again for spending your time with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.